Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on Downtown Mall, by Be Vital Healthcare, optimize health and performance, and by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. And now, here are your hosts, Mike McBee and nurse practitioner Melanie Dorian.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I'm Mike McBee with my co-host, Melanie Dorian. Hey, Melanie, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Mike. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Oh, that's, how about yourself? That's great. Doing well. All things considered, staying healthy. That's very important.
Awesome.
And especially with the name of our show, To Your Health. So, you know, we have a great guest on today. We have Karen Rosengall, and she is a massage therapist and just recently certified as an end-of-life doula. How are you this morning, Karen?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Oh, that's
glad
great.
To be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to see you again. It has been a while.
It has.
So tell us a little bit about, I know you're a massage therapist, and folks, I have gotten several from her, and she's really good, let me tell you.
Thank
that.
Thank you.
And, but this end-of-life doula, and I know it's very important to help people that are in the end of their life. So what exactly do you do?
I help to educate people about the process of dying.
Mm-hmm.
I help people make choices about how they want to die, where they'd like to be buried. You know, there's a lot of practical aspects, and then there's a lot of aspects of just emotional support and spiritual support to be able to be with the person in a calm way, in a supportive, calm, loving way as they make their transition. We celebrate so often in this culture the birth of people coming in, and all of us have this event coming up in our lives, but we don't talk about it a lot as a culture. And even in the hospital settings, it's not talked about a lot. You know, it used to be not that long ago that the dying people were put in a separate place in the hospital, you know, just kind of out of the way. But people are learning now, little by little. There's a big wave of death doulas coming in, and of life doulas. There's a few different names for things, because of the awareness that it's just as sacred a time as a birth of a person.
That's very true. And, you know, I think that obviously there's some folks that are at the end of their life, and they do need somebody else to take them through it. So that's what you do. I'm just going to ask, do you guide them to everything and make sure they're doing everything they're supposed to be doing? Is that how it works?
It depends. You know, every doula is going to do things the way that she's going to bring in whatever skills that she's had before. So I've had nearly 20 years of being a holistic practitioner, doing massage and hypnosis and Reiki, and all of those things I can bring into this. So what I am going to be doing is I have a list of services that people can have, choose from. So there's almost a menu that they can pick from. And just some people are going to want body work. Some people are going to want energy work. Some people are going to want the practical aspect of help, you know, help with the practical aspect. A lot of times in families, people don't know how to talk about it. So it's also in working with families, getting everybody kind of ready, and so they know what to expect.
Right. And then some of these people have a caregiver other than the family, I assume. And so you work with them as well, right?
Sure, mm-hmm. Absolutely work with everybody who's involved. And, you know, a lot of times hospice is coming in at the end of life care to supplement what's happening in the hospitals, and to kind of even take over. I work with, I volunteer with hospice still. The hospital is not here in town, which is a wonderful organization.
So Karen, just so our listeners, because it cut off a little bit, you collaborate with the Hospice of the Piedmont here in Charlottesville, correct?
I volunteer with
volunteer. Them. Okay, great. So, it's really important for our listeners to know how I reach you, but also where else you are available in the community. And as a adult geriatric nurse practitioner, I've helped navigate the transition for the end of life for some of my patients and their families. And I agree, like the Hospice of the Piedmont has done amazing work in the community and is really supportive.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one of the things I want to go a little bit into, because off the air, you and I were talking, you know, I've had the privilege to help some of my patients and their families navigate the transition, but also my own mother who passed of a really aggressive type of cancer a couple of years ago. And at that point, I realized how thankful I was for my education, because I was needed really, not just as a daughter and a family member, but I was needed as effectively an end-of-life doula. Even within a hospice unit, my mom and our family was not well prepared. And that's something you and I were discussing briefly before we started the show, that's your experience as well. So let's go a little bit into that, if you're okay, in terms of the things that are often not discussed and really should be. Help, not just like the practical things of, okay, like the med options, the pain relief, and those questions come up. And I think those are maybe a little bit easier to discuss or more often discussed. But the other stuff, how is it actually going to look, going to feel, not just for the patient, but the family? How can you help the patient during these times? Those things were not discussed with us, not discussed with my mom. And I was mentioning this. My mom asked me, I mean, this is hours before she passed. She asked me, what is it going to look like and feel like? This had not been discussed with her. And what a heavy question to answer for my mom. But at the same time, I had the privilege of having that discussion with my mother. And she was so relieved to get more information. She wanted to know.
Yes. Oh my. Well, we'll get into that in just a moment, but I just wanted to let everybody know they're listening to Your Health right here on 97.9 The Wren. And we are talking with my co-host Melanie Dorian and end-of-life doula and massage therapist Karen Rosengall. So if you could get into that question about what is it that they expect at the end of life? Was that it?
Yeah, a little bit more information about the information that is not well communicated or often not communicated at all to patients and families of people in the transition and in the process of passing and dying. And important information that actually patients are eager to know, hear, and discuss. So Karen, Tell us your experience and the things that you found are really important and critical for people to hear, because like you said, we're all going to go through this. So.
We are all going to agree. Yes, it's so true. I love that you said you had the privilege of talking about this with your mother before she passed. And that is something that, even though we all know that we are approaching eventually death, we don't often talk about how far we want to go in the medical setting.
Yeah.
How many tests, how many surgeries, how many resuscitations?
Yep.
Are we going to put ourselves through before we allow the process? And so sometimes that in and of itself is a conflict in a medical situation, because a doctor is warned to do no harm and to just help you live. And, you know, they're doing the best that they can. And we have a lot available for people to get the best care that they can, if that's what they want. But there's often at the end a time when it's clear that there's not going to be a recovery. And so it's good to have had the conversations before that point. If you haven't and you have a moment to talk about it, that's wonderful. You want to choose things like where you want to die.
Yes.
Where
I absolutely agree.
And who do you need to talk to before you do, in order for you to have a sense of completion, in order for you to have a sense of peace that you can go? Because there's sometimes, you know, we want to hold on because we're worried about our loved ones and how they'll be without us, that we didn't get to say all that we wanted to say. So people have reasons for holding on, sometimes beyond the time that's necessary. And so if you don't have a conversation with someone out loud, it's good to write these things down. There's a sheet that you can get through your doctor's offices that it's called 5 Wishes. And you can just write out and have that in your chart. Should anything happen unexpectedly, it's there in black and white. There's no disagreeing with family members or anything about what you wanted. And it's so important in the end. What kind of a burial do you want? We have in Virginia, there are a lot of changes going on with burials. We have green burials that are becoming more popular again. And they're not illegal in the state of Virginia. They happen a little bit more commonly with in rural settings, but there's all kinds of things like that too.
Mm-hmm. What is a green burial?
A green burial is there's not a big casket. You might have a box, but oftentimes now people are just being wrapped in a cotton cloth and buried into the ground. Oh. And it's a way of giving back to the earth.
Yes.
You know, as your body breaks down, it's used and consumed by the other living beings in there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You become part of the soil.
You do. And you become part of the regeneration of the next life.
I think that's a great idea.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah,
a lot.
I do too. And then you can put a little marker on a tree or something.
Sure. You know, you
get for people to come visit.
That's right. Plant something on top. That's great.
Yeah, so, it is.
Talk to us about also some of the other topics that I found, even within my training, when I was doing rotations as a student in hospice, because I spent a lot of hours in hospice centers. The conversation that also my mom asked me, you know, what is it going to look like? What is it going to feel like? And I know there's a lot of differences, especially depending on the type of medical support that you receive. But there's also a spiritual component that, and I've talked to multiple people who have helped people in the transition. And, you know, all the way from people who believe in, like, the soul is moving on to a different space that we don't quite understand, but that souls can get lost, they don't get lost, or there's a couple different ways of discussing this, but some of the little bit more, not maybe not detailed, but some of the things that people really are curious about, you know, what is it going to look like, what is it going to feel like, and, you know, that level of support, how you can support, because after my experience, I won't lie, I went and saw a lot of people, especially energy workers, people who had done this type of work. And I was curious because I had not been that close to someone in their dying process. And I held my mom's hand as she was taking her last breath. So the last like 30 couple hours of her life, I was literally at her bedside all the way till her last breath. And I realized at one point I needed to guide her. And I wasn't prepared for. And it was interesting to see, you know, when my mom asked me, what could it feel like? What could it look like? I wish I would have had a little bit more knowledge and experience, and I could have guided her that either me or, you know, my brother or dad, like, someone's going to be there helping you. We can be holding your hand, like, you know, we can be supporting you. That's something I wasn't prepared for in terms of explaining to my mom what it can feel like and look like. So tell us a little bit more about your experience and how families can support or friends support.
Sure. I mean, one of the things I just have to say that a lot of people are afraid at the end that they're going to be in, that's going to be painful.
Yes.
They're like, they're okay with the dying process as long as they don't have to hurt. Mm-hmm. And I will say that in the end, this is not usually an issue for people. There are ways to control pain now with palliative care that make it manageable. But some of the things that people wonder about as they're leaving is, like you said, like what it's going to look like. And so in the end, you sleep a lot more and you have less moments of lucidity. Oftentimes within a few days before a person is going to make their transition, they'll have a lucid moment where and it often is enough of one that people will feel like maybe there's a recovery happening because they were so clear for a moment, but that passes usually.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to sleep and their breathing becomes rattled in the end. And it's not that they're not getting enough breath. It sounds like they're not getting enough breath because there's gurgling that happens oftentimes. But they are getting enough breath. And their extremities will start to turn blue because the circulation is slowing.
Mm.
And eventually they just close their eyes and stop
breathing. That's it.
But wow. I will say that the last sense to go is hearing. And so even if your loved one is looking like they're asleep, you're not sure if they're even there anymore, they can still hear. And so as I experienced my father's death, I mean, all it took for him to let go in the very last moment was my mother coming up and whispering in his ear what a honey bun he had been, you know, and that she would be okay and he could go. He took two more breaths and that was it. He could still hear.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I just want to let everybody know they're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren. And I'm Mike McBee, and we are with my co-host, Melanie Dorion. She is a nurse practitioner, functional and integrative medicine. And we're talking with Karen Rosengall. She is a great massage therapist and end-of-life doula. And that's what we're talking about, is what people can expect at the end of their life. And Karen is there to help them along with that, as well as the caregivers and the family too, right, Karen?
Absolutely. You know, and part of what I bring to this is that I've got about 19 years of doing hypnosis with folks too. And so I've done so many past life regressions, and very comfortable. I just accept that this is not the end. When the body dies, it is not the end. And oftentimes in the end, also what I'll say is that to watch someone in the last couple of days, they will sometimes start talking to other beings, other souls that they've known. That we can't see. We can't see these folks, but they can. And they're having conversations. There was one woman who was getting ready to die, and I was with her, and she had a, she told me, she asked me to get her dog off the bed. And I was just beginning, there was no dog on the bed. Her dog, the nurse came in and said, your dog died 10 years ago. Aww. Her dog was back for her.
Aww.
She died the next day. She was also talking to beings in the room above her. And very clearly, she was saying, I'll be there soon. I'm not quite ready. I'll be there soon. But their experience is real. And so if you read any of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's books, you know, she's talked about that a lot too. We don't die alone, even if there's no other human in the room. We don't die alone.
That is probably really important for listeners to hear, especially if someone is close to someone who, you know, has an illness or is nearing the end of life. There's a sense of relief, especially with COVID. It's very limited access to hospital, even access to hospice. If you're not choosing to do it in the home, and I've heard gut-wrenching stories of family members who are nearby who could normally have access and give support, not there. But I think, Karen, you bring up a really important point. Even if maybe not everyone or not everyone who would like to be there can be there, really in the end, there's bigger things that we don't necessarily understand or see or experience in this life until we're in the dying process. So we are not alone. I do believe that there's other presences that, you know, as living, we are not as aware of. Some people are, but I do believe that. And I do believe there are, especially having helped my mother through it, there are guides. As she got lost in her process. And I was informed by someone who does also end of life, doula, and energy work, that some of the medications that they can give to help calm the patient, but also for pain relief, can sometimes lead to confusion in the passing process. And it makes it a little bit more confusing. And I experienced that firsthand with my mom, and I had to guide her back actually into her journey. I know she could hear me, so I appreciate what you said. I gave her the okay effectively. I could tell she was freaking out. And I said, Mom, it's okay. Just let go. I'm like, it's okay. Like, it's really okay. And I was just telling her, I'm like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And two breaths later, boom. She was
all right. That's what she needed.
I guided her back. She got confused. I could tell. Like, she woke up. I'm like, hours of being unconscious. And then she woke up. I'm like, she's confused.
Yeah.
And that can happen.
And that's normal, right? The eyes open. They look alert. They look completely at you and seem to be there.
Knowing that the dying are not alone, they're going to be guided, they're going to be helped and supported, and that they can hear us and hear what's going on. I love that you brought that up, because there's still a lot that can be done, even though a lot of people feel helpless or hopeless.
That's right.
You're not.
And it's also a really good thing to be mindful of in case there's any conflict in the room. You want it to be a peaceful transition for the person. This can be, although it's a very sad moment for people to lose their loved ones, it can also be a profoundly sacred moment when people and family members are included in the passage can really linger as a beautiful memory. And that's a gift. not only to the person who transitioned, but to the people who were in the room who love them.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
And that's why I say it's a privilege. And if you can, if you want, if also the patient, the person is agreeable to that, you know, take part in it in the way that they need it. Mm-hmm. But it's a privilege to be part of that. It's like, it's a privilege to share a birth. It's a privilege to share passing and to share the end of life experience. And it should be celebrated. And our culture really fears that. I'm not saying it; those are easy emotions to be sad, the loss, grieving. No, and that's not what I'm saying. And I think we can agree to that. But it can also be a privilege and a beautiful moment.
Absolutely.
Oh wow! Yeah. That makes a lot of sense for the health of the family, right?
Yes.
And speaking of that, folks, you are listening to Your Health right here on 97.9 The Wren. I'm Mike McBee talking with my co-host Melanie Dorion and massage therapist and end-of-life doula
Karen Rosignol.
You're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren, brought to you by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, by Be Vital Healthcare, and by Hamilton's on the Downtown Mall, featuring sustainable fine dining on Charlottesville's Downtown Mall for over 20 years. Mike and Melanie will be right back.
Be Vital Health strives to support individuals, companies, and schools of all sizes in all of their health needs. They are now offering COVID testing to companies and schools. Individuals can come to the office, where in most cases, you'll be in and out in less than 30 minutes. They will also come to your company or school. You can visit them at BeVitalHealth.com or call them at 434-964-6270. Be Vital Health supports 97.9 The Wren.
Support for this station today is from Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. During this COVID emergency, you can find out about Rebecca's daily hours, mail order options, and front of store pickup at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com. Rebecca stands with the community during this time of social distancing and is there to safely provide the nutritional support you need. That's Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com.
And we were just talking about the health of the family, and Karen, you were about ready to speak on that.
I get excited when I talk about it. We don't know how to die anymore. It's the most natural thing. Birth and death are the things that all of us will go through, but we don't know how to do it. We don't know how to talk about it. We don't know what to expect. And by being with our loved ones who are dying, by talking about the process of letting go, we learn how to do it ourselves.
That's a good point.
It's a good point.
It's the last gift that the dying person can give to you. And it is a gift to be able to be there and to help them. Yeah.
That's a really important thing you just said, and so impactful, that by being there for someone else, just like women have done ever since humans existed, helping someone give birth, you also learn how to do it and you prepare yourself and your family. I love that. This is so empowering.
So you're like a midwife for death.
Yes.
Imagine that.
Yeah. It is a process. And there are people who refer to it as laboring. You're laboring because there are predictable things that will happen at the end, just like in the beginning when you're having a baby. There are such predictable, phases of the process of delivery. It is that way in the end as well. Mm-hmm. We labor ourselves to the next big adventure,
That's amazing. Well, yeah. Karen, could you tell folks how do people access you?
Okay, I would love to. Thank you. So you can find me online, Rosignol Healing Arts. .com.
Mm-hmm.
My phone number is 267-844-2183. Or you can email me at rosignolhealingarts@gmail.com.
Right, can you spell that? Rosignol.
Yes, of course. Yes. ROSS as in Sam.
Mm-hmm.
IGNOL.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm French.
Oh, you are me too.
I grew up around a lot of Rossignols, actually.
Oh, you did? Oh.
And I'm a skier, so my skis, I had skis that were Rossignol skis. Perfect. So I saw your name. I'm like, she's French or has French heritage.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome. Karen, any final words or advice for our listeners on, you know, supporting themselves, family members, you know, your top tips that you would like our listeners, like takeaway points from this conversation in terms of end of life care for themselves or friends or family members?
Self-care for the family members.
Wow,
self-care,
that's a really good
self-care.
One.
You call in hospice, consider hospice if you're in the hospital system and your loved one is going through a terminal process, consider hospice. Consider getting support for yourself and for the people who are going through the dying process themselves. I'd love to be a support if I can, and God bless you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes. Well, it's good seeing you. That's
nice
for
seeing
sure.
You too.
Yeah, I actually started my video back since
hit
the end here. But yeah, really, really enjoyed speaking with you, Karen. And
Thank you, I did too.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, our listeners have gotten some great information about that. And I know, you know, everybody goes through that, and it's very much needed.
Yes, and it's great to be able to get the word out a little bit that there are people out here who are available to help at times like this.
Yeah.
Yes.
So even though it's natural, a natural process of life, it is still one of the most taxing things. So.
I totally agree.
Thank you, Karen, for
everything
that you've done today and all the great information. And again, that's Rosignol Healing Arts.
@gmail.com.
Okay. Oh, good.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I will probably be reaching out to you so I can add that to my resources. Because I do integrative medicine for cancer patients. So I help transition quite a few people. So
I look forward to hearing from you.
I know. And now I have one primary care on board who's coming on. She's also very passionate about geriatric care and possibly hiring another primary care physician who's going to join my practice. So we're going to just need to continue expanding our resources. And we're all integrative. So a more holistic integrative approach to care at all levels, all levels.
Oh, yeah. I would love to be a part of that.
You know, just through what we do, we offer a lot of supportive therapies to symptom relief through cancer treatment, but also we've extended the life of many of our patients through an integrative approach. Then we also need to help them have resources if, you know, they get to that point where they need to just start preparing for end of life transition. And I won't lie, I don't have a lot of resources. So
there aren't a lot. There's more and more, but there's still not a lot out there.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Thank you, Karen.
It was fun. You guys hit it easy.
Bye, Karen.
Bye. That was excellent.
Thanks. I'm still on.
Okay.
I heard that's who it was. Okay, bye.
Cool. Oh my God, she's amazing.
Yes, yes.
Thank you for bringing her in.
Oh, I knew that once I contacted her and she said that she was a doula, I said, we definitely got to get her on.
That was a really great interview with Karen Rosignol. So, Mel, how was your week?
So far, it's been pretty busy. We did at the clinic, we did 25 COVID tests for the antibodies. We're part of the first wave of people in the country doing the antibody testing for immunity or exposure.
Oh, that's good.
So, yeah, we're starting to collect some of that data to see how people are developing antibodies and learning more about how this virus affects people long-term-wise. So,
it's definitely novel, and it's definitely, 5 to 6 to 7 times more deadly than the flu. So people talk about, it's like the flu. No, it's not.
That's correct. It's not. It's absolutely not like the flu. It doesn't act the same. I think we're going to learn a whole lot about how we develop immunity to it and how different people develop different types of immunity right now. Mm-hmm. The initial data is, I won't lie, pretty confusing about what we're finding in terms of long-term immunity in people who tested positive and people who didn't, but people with suspected COVID. This is not acting like anything that we've seen before. And I'm certainly seeing that in the blood test right now. My results are not what I had expected. I'm eager to collect more data and learn more about this because right now it's...
Yeah, that's what we need to do. More data.
Yep.
More data.
Yeah, I mean, really, we do, because we just really don't understand this virus is what this is telling us.
So true, Mel. Hey, I'd like to ask our guest today, Jessica Ure, co-founder and director of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback, how COVID has affected her business of helping us reduce stress.
Well, because neurofeedback does involve physical contact, I have not been seeing clients in my office since March 12th. Mm. So I have about 15 clients who are were at a stage in their therapy where they could do home training with the equipment. So I have kits that I've put together and rent out to clients, and I help them remotely to attach their own electrodes and run their own sessions at their homes. Mm. So I have been working with some people like that.
Including myself.
Well, yeah. That's great. That's great. I'd love to try that. So that reduces anxiety, I think, was the main thing.
It can. It depends on what's going on with the person and why they're anxious. So neurofeedback is a way to help calm and balance the nervous system, the functioning of the actual firing of the neurons. So if your nervous system is over aroused and in high gear, possibly from a high stress situation, neurofeedback can be a way to help to re-regulate yourself a little bit.
So Mike, why don't we just talk a little bit about some of the stuff we've been reading, since today's episode is really focused on mental health, because I've been doing a lot of research on this, seeing this in my patients, definitely increase in depression and anxiety, and a lot of concerns around long-term mental health, especially because my patient population tends to have chronic illness, and now some of them can be maybe a little bit less resilient because they're already inflamed and struggling with other conditions. And some of the information I've been reading about how this is impacting people is pretty impressive. And we're looking at some Chinese study, for example, where almost 43% of the people who responded were saying that they had increased anxiety around this time around COVID. And there's a really good article on the Harvard Gazette. It came out on April 16th, mm-hmm. that was talking about their forum on mental health that went from a few people attending in the past to now over 700 people on the forum. Yeah, on the April 8th forum. So healthcare providers and people are just really struggling to support patients, or people are struggling to support themselves. One thing that I found really, really, something that was for me unexpected was the discrimination. And the article talked about this a little bit. And I talked to other people, and I also, my family, I'm Canadian, so I talked to my family members in Canada, and they've been in a lot more serious lockdown. In the province of Quebec, it's in some areas, possible militaries coming in the streets, and then certainly police. So they've been in very serious lockdown in the province of Quebec. And what my father was reporting is that now they're starting to see discrimination against the elderly. So the people who are at risk, so the younger population is becoming angry and frustrated and anxious about being in lockdown because of the elderly, to protect the elderly. And now we're starting to see discrimination against the elderly. And my father had people close to him at the grocery store. People were physically violent with the elderly, discriminating because of you that were in lockdown. Yeah, it was getting pretty ugly in some areas. So that's something I had not anticipated, and I can really see having a negative impact. The elderly is already at higher risk for depression, anxiety, loneliness, and now we're isolating because that's the only way right now to really slow the spread. But the emotional impact, the trauma that's going to be around this, I think we're going to start seeing a whole different level of issues with mental health, with aging and discrimination around that. So that's something I found really interesting in some of the reading I've been doing around mental health, you know, especially looking at SARS, for example, in 2003, which is nothing like what we're experiencing right now, but is what we have in terms of significance. You know, people over 29, like almost 30% of people through SARS experienced trauma long-term wise. So I think we really have to have this conversation with friends, family, and certainly Jessica and I with our patients, just because this is really going to have a significant impact on our mental health as a planet as a whole, and certainly as a population as a whole in the U.S.
You are so right, Mel. Folks, you're listening to Your Health here on 97.9 The Wren. And we're talking to Jessica Ure, director of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback. Jessica, how can our listeners get help?
Yeah, so there's definitely asking for help is the big thing that I think that there's a big push with getting the new resources into people's hands, letting them know where to go to ask for help, encouraging them to ask for help in the first place, and helping them to recognize signs and symptoms that might indicate that they need help. People may never have pursued mental health support before, and they may not really be able to easily identify that they could benefit from doing a telehealth session with a mental health professional. They may be having some physical symptoms that they're not associating with being a result from the psychological stress of what we're going through. And so it may not just be worry or depression or anxiety that they're experiencing. They may feel like they're doing okay mentally, but they may be having a lot of trouble with sleep. They may be just not being able to relax in their body. A significant decrease or increase in their energy level. So not just that they may feel not motivated or disinterested in doing things, but they could feel a surge of energy too that can indicate an imbalance in the nervous system. So, and also bodily symptoms that can be kind of manifestations of the emotional stress that we're under, stomach aches, headache, muscle pain, even sweating and chills, an increased startle response. All of these things can indicate that the person could really use some support in learning some new strategies that they can do for free at their house just to help re-regulate their bodies. And that will really also support their immune system and keep them healthier.
So you mentioned sleep, energy level, either surge or decreased, aches and pain and chills. They may think they have coronavirus with those symptoms.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, their anxiety goes up another 10
levels.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's happening all the time. Yeah.
So Jessica here, and thank you, Jessica, for joining us. This is really, really helpful and critical for people to understand. So Jessica is the co-founder for the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback. And Jessica and I have been collaborating for years on patients, and she has helped me also with some of my neurological imbalances, especially coming out of having neurological Lyme disease. I had a lot of neurological and cognitive imbalances that I got to experience, and I share because it's helpful to understand my perspective and where I come from. Really, really a critical tool to collaborate with Jessica and the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback, because I've been able to acquire new tools, integrate not just neurofeedback, but integrate as a whole biofeedback. And I learn a lot, different tools on how to manage my stress and how to manage the reaction to stress. Because the goal is not to remove all the stressors. That's impossible. It's to manage the body's reaction to stress. And that's something that just has been really important at helping me. And so Jessica, she's a licensed, and she specializes in trauma, emotional trauma, and neurofeedback. Really, we're going to focus on today some at-home strategies that people can do and can integrate right away today, this afternoon, to help cope with stress. Again, it's not about removing the stress or the emotion. It's about coping with them better. That's something that was hard for me to understand at the beginning. I want the stress gone, or I want the anxiety gone, or I want, well, not likely, but it's how do you react to it? So those are really important things. And I found that neurofeedback and biofeedback have been critical tools. My patients have had really good success also integrating those strategies. So why don't you introduce a little bit some of the strategies that you and I have discussed about what people can do at home in terms of coping with all the stress, the anxiety, and the depression that they might be feeling?
Some basic ones, obviously, are to be selective with the sources and the level of exposure that you are giving yourself to news and social media. So really, I think it can be pretty easy to fall into a compulsive pattern of checking the news too often, and also exposing yourself to some really kind of media frenzy that's not helpful. So really kind of put some restrictions on yourself with that. Staying connected, particularly with your inner circle. So the people that you really care about and that you know you can turn to in need. And staying connected with those people, not just for you, but for them too.
That is important. Folks, you're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren. Mel and I are talking to Jessica Ure, director of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback and helping folks through the trauma from COVID.
Having a sense of purpose and providing help to another can be a really bolstering thing as well for people. Also, structuring your time, that's a basic one. Kind of setting aside whether you're working or not, kind of have a structure for your day, especially with sleep hygiene. Have an hour range in which you're definitely going to get ready for bed and get into bed. You're going to turn off electronics, have a wake-up routine that doesn't range a whole lot. That will really help keep you on schedule, and it will help you stay happier. Also, knowing where to go for help and asking for help when you need it. And I can talk about some of the resources that are local and also national for that. But, you know, really making time, setting time aside to take care of your body and your mind is very important. And some basic things are to check in with your breathing. Mm. A lot of times when we're stressed out, we begin to breathe very shallowly and up in the top of our chest. So that can really activate the sympathetic nervous system, that fight, flight, and freeze system that will cause all of this tension in the body. It will activate inflammatory responses. It will create foggy thinking and difficulty with decision making. It can make you feel anxious. There's plenty of apps that you can use. There's a free one called Cardia Deep Breathing. It's spelled with a K, K-A-R-D-I-A, Deep Breathing. And that one is a paced breather app. It's very simple. It just has a dot that gets bigger when you breathe in and you fill your lungs up. And then the dot gets smaller when you breathe out. And if you breathe slowly and deeply twice a day for about 20 minutes, you will notice a marked difference in the arousal level of your nervous system. That app is really helpful. There's also a free app that was developed for veterans through the government called CBT-I Coach. So like Cognitive Behavioral Therapy-I Coach. That one has a ton of resources on it. It's sort of like having a therapist in your pocket. And that one is free as well. Another great one is Headspace. I do think they offer some of their meditations for free. And then there is a premium level as well. So lots of apps that can do guided meditations. There's also YouTube is a great resource. Not just for meditations, or I've been playing a lot of like Tibetan singing bowls on YouTube. There are a lot of restorative and yin yoga practices that you can do. You don't have to ever have done yoga before. I call them advanced pillow hugging. So you just get some pillows and a blanket, you know, make yourself a space that, you know, there's plenty of free videos on YouTube where lovely men and women will guide you through doing some very gentle stretches that will help release your muscles and settle you down and slow you down in your body. Really paying attention to what you're eating and drinking and how much. This is one that I think we're all struggling with. And I can't tell you how many memes and friends have told me that they're drinking more wine or beer or whatever. But those things ultimately are going to increase inflammation. They're not going to make you feel good. They're going to disrupt your sleep. So really moderating those and trying to find some healthy foods and drinks that can be supportive and feel good, like some nice herbal teas, and making a routine out of that can be really supportive and simple. And even just finding time to journal, to write. Write a letter to an actual physical letter to a friend. That kind of kills two birds with one stone because you've got the connection, social connection, and some quiet time.
Folks, you're listening to Your Health right here on 97.9 The Wren. I'm Mike McBee, along with my co-host Melanie Dorion. We're talking to Jessica Ure, director and co-founder of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback. And she was about to tell us about Marco Polo.
I introduced this to Melanie and she liked it too.
I'm addicted.
And it's a way to communicate with your friends and relatives, but it's asynchronous. So you don't have to say, oh, well, what time are you available? Leave a little video and it's sort of like they just can answer it whenever they have time. I think that takes a little bit of the stress off of kind of planning a time to communicate with someone.
That makes sense. So, yeah, I kind of come up on my own watching Facebook. You know, I'll go through Facebook and I've decided that the only posts I'm going to look at or, you know, acknowledge are the positive ones. I have a friend down in Virginia Beach and that's all she does. And it's so much fun just to, and there are many people that that's all you'll see are positive posts. And so that's plus limit the Facebook time as well. Like you were totally correct on that.
Yes. And I really do like some of those apps that Jessica was mentioning.
Yes. I'm going to put that in our promo. You know,
yep. For
learn the free apps.
Mm-hmm. For meditation, I also use Insight Timer. It's cool because they show worldwide who's meditating when you get on. And there's a ton of free guided meditations all the way from 5 minutes to 60 minutes. And they are offering a pretty significant discount for a year membership if you want the premium. But I've been using just the basic unpaid or free one. And that's been helpful for me learning how to do meditation.
What's the name of that again?
Insight Timer. It's an app. So meditation is not something that comes easily for me. I can do very long sessions, but it's been helpful to maintain calmer nervous system. And the breathing has been really critical for me. If I feel like I'm getting in trouble, if I can just stop and take a couple deep breaths and really extend the exhale, and maybe Jessica can go into this a little bit more, but my understanding is that of physiology, inhaling and exhaling requires different parts of the nervous system, and exhaling, especially when you exhale slowly, really calms the nervous system down and involves more of the parasympathetic versus the sympathetic. So the breathing, the exhale is the most important part. And exhaling slowly and calmly will get the body out of that fight or flight or sympathetic mode and put it more in a parasympathetic and calmer mode. So even just like doing 10 deep breaths and exhaling slowly, I found that in myself and my patients to be very helpful. So Jessica, what are your thoughts about that one for the breathing?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right about the parasympathetic. And I think a lot of people think that a way to calm yourself is to take a big breath in and then push it out really fast. And that will actually do the opposite. That will make you feel more anxious. You really want your out breath to be about one third longer than your in breath. And that's why the paced breather apps can be really helpful. On average, a great breathing rate is 6 breaths per minute, which equals 4 seconds in for your in breath and 6 seconds out for your out breath. So
that's
pacer
a good
can
tip.
Set that. And so you can start, that's a good place to start with a paced breathing is a 4 second in breath and a 6 second out breath. And then if that feels a little too slow or a little too fast for you, you can tweak it and adjust it to you, to what feels right. But that's kind of a good starting point.
Got it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I just tried that. It works.
Jessica, I know there is some back and forth about how you guys could be supporting patients and clients through this. I hope there's been some positive updates. And are you able right now to take new patients and new clients on? How is that working?
I think we just are. I don't know that there has been any really clear communication. It's kind of everything is all over the board, but there are definitely a lot of resources out there, particularly, I mean, locally, it's pretty awesome. There's a site called helphappenshere.org, which has a lot of information about local resources for people. Obviously, Region 10's website, they're connecting people. There are particularly, I mean, University of Virginia's counseling and psychological services is also doing counseling for students and faculty. Telehealth wise, the Women's Initiative is offering that as well. There's a website called supportseville.com that also has links to all of these places. So if you just go to supportseville.com, you can find information about all of those, as well as a lot of us who are in private practice are doing volunteer work. Actually, just yesterday, I signed up for coronavirusonlinetherapy.org, which is actually offering free and discounted rate telehealth sessions for health providers who are on the front lines. Mm. And there's also the Virginia Community Response Network, which is also offering support, particularly for healthcare workers. So there are a lot of resources out there. I think if someone just Googles Charlottesville therapy, they will find a way to connect with a therapist and do telehealth, because there's still a lot that can be done on video or even on phone. And just to have someone outside of the people in your household to kind of share with what's going on with you can be really helpful.
Great tips, folks. Thanks, Jess.
You're listening to Your Health, brought to you by Hamilton's Own Downtown Mall, by B Vital Healthcare, Optimize Health and Performance, and by Rebecca's Natural Foods, where your journey to a healthy life begins. To Your Health is heard every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 on 97.9 The Wren. Mike and Melanie will be right back after these messages.
B Vital Health strives to support individuals, companies, and schools of all sizes in all of their health needs. They are now offering COVID testing to companies and schools. Individuals can come to the office, where in most cases, you'll be in and out in less than 30 minutes. They will also come to your company or school. You can visit them at bevitalhealth.com or call them at 434-964-6270. B Vital Health supports 97.9 The Wren.
Support today is coming from Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of contemporary American fine dining on Charlottesville's historic downtown mall. At Hamilton's, you'll find a seafood, steaks, and vegetarian fare with a full bar and eclectic wine list. Hamilton's supports sustainability in food production, transportation, and preparation, and in the community at large. You can see the lunch and dinner menus, make a reservation, or book the private dining space for your function all at Hamilton's Restaurant.com.
Welcome back. Take it away, Mel.
If someone wants to connect with you directly or your center, what are the best ways to contact you, Jessica?
So they can go to our website, which is virginianeurofeedback.com. They can reach out by email at info@virginianeurofeedback.com, or they can call the clinic at 434-878-3146 and make an appointment for a free consultation.
Okay, great.
Sounds good. You know, one of the things that I've noticed through the reading, these young people, you know, how they're mostly, at least from personal experience, mostly concerned with their little social network, their homework or their schoolwork, these immediacies. This whole COVID pandemic, the day at home, is having them all of a sudden they're thinking about their health, and that's a great thing. You know, when you're young, you just, oh, I'm going out, yeah, we're going here, get something to eat, blah blah. You don't even think about that stuff. But now they're saying, wait a minute, where are we going to go to eat? They're thinking about the food they're taking. They're thinking about their own health. And that's a silver lining I see.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's a wake up call for any age group to take care or to at least be mindful of your health and start thinking about what you're eating, what you're doing, exercising and getting outside and your mental health. Anyone who doesn't understand that at this point, that the baseline health is very critical overall, especially right now in if you're going to get infected or be in contact to have better outcomes. I think any way right now that people can be more mindful about their physical and mental and emotional health is really positive. So I'm really excited, Mike, that you're seeing that and you're hearing that, because certainly the at-risk groups, the elderly, I think people with pre-existing conditions, this has been a big wake-up call. But I think it's a wake-up call for the planet that as a population, we are not healthy, especially in industrialized country in the U.S., including in the U.S. It's important for people of all age groups to understand the importance of just a good, healthy baseline of diet and lifestyle.
That is so true.
But did you have any other tips or any other ideas for our listeners and for us on how to help manage and how to better cope with what's going on? We're certainly going to share the contact information for your clinic, for you, and
yes, we are.
Resources. Yeah, the resources you've given up. But any final thoughts and ideas for us for this mental health episode?
Yeah, sure. Well, I would just reemphasize that for people who may not have ever reached out for help before, that there's a lot of resources and a lot of free resources right now. And it is a great time to do that. And I think that they might be pleasantly surprised with what they find in terms of help. There are some other sites that I'd just like to mention quickly. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.org, has a list of coping strategies, as does SAMHSA. SAMHSA has some coping strategies. These are both mental health organizations. So there are a lot of resources, even just in pamphlet form, that can help people. They can just read over them and think about that, but I would really encourage people to get out and take walks if they can, obviously, reach out to their social support and their network of close people, and just really check in with their bodies and say, how am I doing? How's my body doing? How do I feel? Do I have muscle aches? Am I breathing shallowly? And how am I sleeping? And because those things are really important for us to help keep our immune systems healthy. We can't just keep plowing on business as usual right now. It's not business as usual. We do have to stop and actually pay attention to ourselves and take care of ourselves more so than usual.
That's true. And the stress, I've noticed just stress can cause all sorts of physical maladies, like ulcerative colitis, for one. That can really, if just stress alone can give you that.
Correct.
Reduce the stress. That's awesome. I'm learning a lot. I love this. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jessica. And I look forward to continuing to collaborate with you and connecting. And like, these resources have been really, really helpful. And just the couple of tips you've given us also very helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. And you can get with Melanie and she'll tell you how to access this. We are going to be putting this into a podcast as well on our 97.9. station.
Great.
All right. Thank you, Jessica.
Right. Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Folks, you're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren. And we've been talking to Karen Rosignol and Jessica Ewer. Mel, how about that?
That was awesome.
That was great. That was awesome. Yes,
she's,
it was.
I know. She's really good.
I mean, you know, it's like, so you have to look at, you have to look at your sleep. You have to look at your stress levels going up and down. Your energy levels going up and down. Whether you get aches and pains, chills, those sorts of things, that could actually be a symptom of a mental disturbance, right?
Yeah, I found that really interesting also, like the energy level. I'm certainly used to my patients reporting a lot of fatigue, but she has a really good point, just got a good point that you can have a heightened neurological response where actually you don't get more depressed or fatigued, where you get more manic and hyper. So any extremes on the spectrum of energy and fatigue might be a symptom of emotionally struggling with either depression or anxiety or just emotionally being out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly looking at all those things. I've had a lot of patients also tell me about worsening of their musculoskeletal symptoms. So the pain, lots of people are reporting more pain generally, more back pain. So I found that interesting that she brought that up as one of the main symptoms of you might be having some emotional issues and psychological issues, but it's just coming out as physical pain. So just be aware that physical pain can be a manifestation of emotionally really struggling and not doing well.
Yeah, that's and most people don't even equate those two.
Yep,
unfortunately.
Exactly.
Just as an aside, just to point out to our audience, if you do have neck pain or back pain, there's a Dr. Kinsey who put out two books, Fix Your Own Neck and Fix Your Own Back, and those books are fabulous and they really, really work. I was in pain management for a number of years, the typical standard pain management, pills and injections. You know, of course, the pills alone were enough to knock you out. It was terrible. And so I got with this gal, a physical therapist, and she taught me the exercises. And I said, how many times a week do I need to come to physical therapy? And she said, well, this one. Once, learn the exercises. I demonstrated that I knew what they were. She made me show them back to her after teaching them. And she said, good, there you go. That's it. And it took away the pain. I got off the pain meds over a year. And I'm telling you what, it's amazing. So if, in fact, you're just suffering from physical pain, check that out. You know, fix your own neck, fix your own back, Dr. McKinsey. And
Great. That's
a really good tip, at least for me. It certainly was. Any more stressors out there? I mean, this people that are elderly, you mentioned, I didn't even realize that.
Yep.
Elderly people were being discriminated against.
Yeah, and that's something that I heard and directly through my family members that mm-hmm. they are starting to see that in other areas that have been in lockdown for a little bit longer or stricter lockdown, where the younger people are starting to discriminate because everyone's frustrated. Everyone's exhausted. Sure. This has been hard. People are viewing it, hey, it's because of you. It's your fault. The elderly or the people with pre-existing conditions and starting to discriminate against them, against the group, the higher risk group, which was really unanticipated for, I did not think about that angle in terms of what the isolation, the loneliness, social distancing, the impact of all of that, the accumulation, and then some people are getting really frustrated and taking it out on the high-risk group. So for me, that was an interesting view of how this is impacting people's mental health and what it's going to be doing to people and everything associated around all the negative outcomes associated with discrimination. I think it's just going to possibly worsen loneliness, which we know loneliness, especially in the elderly, is a big problem. It worsens almost any condition, contributes to a lot of chronic illnesses, especially mental health, but you can see more association with chronic disease being worse or harder to manage when there's a lot of loneliness. So discrimination is only going to push that. So, you know, this is just a reminder for people to be graceful and patient and humble. This is hard for everybody. This is a time where we are all in this together. So we all need to give everybody grace and patience and just some love. Like, this is not a time to be angry and discriminate. And this is not a time to force more isolation onto people. So we need to be respectful of that and just be kind. This is a hard time.
Yes, absolutely. Be kind. Absolutely.
Be kind.
Kindness goes a long way. Well, folks, another show is done. Next week, we have the co-founder and director of the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center, Dr. Ron Swatzina. I'm really excited about that. Till then.
You've been listening to Your Health with your hosts, Mike McBee and Melanie Doring. To Your Health is brought to you by Be Vital Healthcare. Optimize health and performance by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Be listening to 97.9 The Wren next Sunday morning at 8 for To Your Health.